Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. From our workshops in Juneau, Alaska and London, England, we get together on the Echolink system to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke.
Excellent, fine business, and welcome to the special Straight Key Night edition of Solder Smoke number 45. Well, that's great, Mike. Your CW sounds excellent, and I was transmitting. What you were listening to on my side was an HW8 going through a Drake 2B, so two kind of oldies but goodies there on our side. And what was generating the CW up there in Juneau? KL7R, M0HBR.
All right, Bill. That was fun. Yeah, you got a great fist. I never heard it before. And I recognize the back wave side tone of the HW8. That's good to hear. I was generating CW with an old J38 that was given to me. And Elecraft K2, and I was receiving it on my FT100D through an old Heathkit HS1661 speaker. I love my old Heathkit speaker. What's been happening? I'm talking to you on native Echolink. I've had so much trouble with my machine crashing on my Link radio due to my serial ports that I decided to bypass the serial ports for a while here. Over.
Well, excellent. Okay. Well, yeah, I guess we'll... So we no longer have any RF in the Link at all now. But I guess we've made up for it by using CW. And I guess we did that because Straight Key Night is approaching. We had straight keys on both sides of the contact there. My key is just an old... one of these old cheapo keys that we all bought at one point. It's not a fancy J38 or anything like that, but I guess it's the same design. But mine is mounted on the base of a Vibraplex Bug. I had a Vibraplex Bug. I was ambitious as a teenager and bought a good old Vibraplex Bug, but I never mastered it, and I never really got to like it. So, hey, there he is. There's Billy coming in to join the Solder Smoke gang. All right. There we go. Anyway, I never got to master the use of the Vibraplex Bug, and over the years and over many moves, it just deteriorated. Entropy is not kind to Vibraplex Bugs. So after a while, I just took everything off. I just completely cleared off the base, and I gave the parts to Gustavo, HI8G, in Santo Domingo, and he used them to repair a keyer, to repair a bug that had been given to him many years earlier by a pretty famous radio amateur named Fred Lau. Fred was in the Dominican Republic in the 60s and was a beloved member of the Dominican Radio Club. And when he left Gustavo his bug. But same thing happened. Gustavo was missing a few parts. So anyway, I took off all the all the guts, all the mechanism of my Vibroplex and gave them to Gustavo, but the base stays with me, and the base is what on what that's the thing that I have the my straight key mounted. So I guess I've got a little bit of Vibroplex in my in my straight key KL7R M0HPR.
All right, Bill, and good morning, Billy. Well, that's you got a better fist than I do. I'm ashamed to say I've been using a keyer for quite a while, and I used to have a pretty good straight key fist. But it takes practice, and I haven't done it much. I usually do it on straight key nights, and I fire up the old HW16 and the DDS VFO and crawl around down there. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, you'd do better with the straight key than I do. Fine on the Vibroplex base. I had a Vibroplex at one time. I think I gave it to my mom, or I got it from my mom. I don't know how we wound up with a Vibroplex, but we had one in the house. And I had super glued a sinker to the weight swing arm to slow it down on dips. And I had experimented with all kinds of horrible weighting on the DAW side and swing and all those affectations. It was fun though, and I get fair at it. But I'm a keyer guy. I just now, just this evening, fixed my K12 keyer from K1EL.com. He sent me yet another rev of the keyer, and that fixed all the bugs in it. So my K1 and my I had fixed. I think the last time I talked to you, Ellicraft sent me a new crystal, and I fixed that. And then K1EL sent me a new chip, and I'm all happy now. Over to you there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Yeah, well, I guess if I'm good at a straight key, it's because I don't think I sounded too good there either. I haven't done it in a while. Some of my letters were a bit off. But it's the only kind of CW generator that I've ever used. At one point, I had one of these old Heath Kit. I think it was an HD1410 bugs, electronic bugs, but I just never got into it. So I used CW for many, many years, and always used it with the straight key. I mean, I get up to about, I guess, about 18 words a minute, 18, 20 words a minute. But then recently I've become a phone guy, and as listeners can tell from all of our discussions of DSB and SSB, I guess I've always, deep down, been a phone guy. So anyway, we thought we'd include a little bit of CW because of all of this discussion of the mode there on QRPL this week, and also mostly because Straight Key Night is upon us. Let's see, we're at edition number 45. It's the 30th of December, Saturday morning, 0745 GMT. I slept late this morning, so we're doing this a little bit later than normal. Hence Billy's arrival early in the show. He usually gets here for the last few minutes. But Mike, you mentioned crystals, and that brings to mind crystal radios, because that's what we've been building here. Billy and I put together a crystal radio and had great success with it, and just really great fun. We started out, I'll tell you about it a little bit. It's just a real simple, it's as simple as you could get, really. Just a parallel LC circuit. We wound the coil on an old Renew, bottle of Renew for contact lens fluid, little plastic bottle. We wound the coil, we put some taps on it, put an old variable capacitor across that, one connection to ground, one connection up to the 20 meter antenna up on the roof that we're using sort of as a long wire antenna. Our first detector was the standard, I think it's 1N34 germanium diode. Used some Hi-Z headphones that you encouraged me to buy at a UK radio rally. And man, we fired that thing up and almost instantly heard the melodious sounds of Kismat Radio, 10:35 a.m. in London. Rocking the town in Hindi and Gujarati and I think they have some Pashtun and Bengali in there from time to time, but really cool. And we listened to it for a long time, and we're using the IN34. But then, and I'll tell you, let me turn it over to you first, but then later I'll tell you, then we started using some real crystals, KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, way cool, guys, and congratulations. I went and took a look on your gadgeteer.us site and in your news there, and you had a pointer to it, and I was impressed. I went and I copied your schematic, and I took my old Quaker Oats box that I had in reserve with the wires on it and the magnet wire on it, and went ahead and tinned all the jumper connections to the magnet wire and wired up my my crystal receiver, and followed your schematic, and it worked a lot better with your schematic. You your antenna input had a tap few turns up from bottom. I usually put my antenna right at the top of the coil, right at the high Z part of the coil. So that was dumb on my part, but yours worked really well. And so I did that, and I received a couple different signals here. I didn't have as much luck with detectors apparently than you did there, Bill. Over.
Yeah. Well, what we did with detectors, we I had here in the junk box an actual galena crystal and cat whisker detector arrangement with a phosphor bronze wire and a hunk of actual galena crystal. We got it from Antique Electronic Supply many years ago, and it's been kicking around. It's the kind of thing that I kind of like to leave sitting up on top of the rig because it's a connection to the earliest days of radio. And anyway, we built this whole thing on just a piece of wood. You could see it on the gadgeteer.us website at Gadgeteer News. But we just built everything just using super glue and duct tape to hold everything down on top of this board, which made I think it looks really, really cool. But then it gives you room for expansion. So when we wanted to go to the galena detector, we just slapped that down with some duct tape next to the germanium diode. And with little alligator clips, we were able to switch over and use the galena crystal. And that's where you get into the real fun of crystal radio, when you actually have to, as the old radio amateurs did, had to actually kind of poke that hunk of galena with the phosphor bronze wire in search of what they called the sweet spot, where what you're actually doing, and they didn't know this at the time, but you're actually forming a PN junction and in essence, making a homebrew solid-state diode, which is really pretty amazing. But you would do it, and Billy did it, and he would move that thing around, and you'd be listening in the headphones until you heard the signals coming in. It's best to do it first with the factory-made germanium diode, because then you know that the tune circuit and the antenna and the ground connection are all working and capable of putting a signal out. But then we switched over to the galena, and of course it worked. Not quite as well as the factory-made germanium diode, but it worked. And then, Mike, that got us thinking about using other items for detectors. And I know you did some exploration in this area, so why don't you tell us about what you did in terms of finding other items to be used as detectors, KL7R, M0HBR.
Well, I went looking, and based on what you guys did, it looked like so much fun. I went looking for a detector. You're supposed to be able to use a razor blade or a saw blade or a rusty bit of rust or a corroded bit of copper. And I tried all those things. I tried. I had some really beat up circuit board that had some copper oxide on it and green spots, and that didn't work. And I tried rusty nails. I had stolen my stepfather's framing hammer, and it had all kinds of rust spots on the head. I tried that, and I tried loading up the framing hammer. That didn't work. I thought bluing would work, like on bluing, like to keep rust down, because I thought that was the stuff on the outside of razor blades. So I tried a drill bit that had some, looked like bluing on it. I tried a sawzall blade that had bluing on it. I was going to bring out the 357 Magnum, but I figured the wife would not like that there. So I had no luck. End result, the lab was a failure. I had no luck with anything other than my germanium diode, M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Well, take heart, buddy, because help is on the way. I'll explain here. We wanted to go. We were, you know, it's amazing how many times do we say this, that we were thinking about the same things. And we decided to try to use something else. And here's what happened. We live very close to the Science Museum and the Natural History Museum here in London. And we get up there fairly regularly. And in a shop at one of these stores, they sell little bits of different kinds of minerals. They sell them in these little things. They're about the size of a whiskey shot glass, and they have little chunks of the stuff in there. And one of the items that they had on sale, and we must have bought this thing a year ago, one of these things where you buy it and you toss it into the junk box saying, I might use that someday. And they had a little thing full of fool's gold, iron pyrite. And I had heard that this was good as a detector. So, of course, being a radio amateur, I decided we needed some of this, and I plunked down $2 or $3 or whatever it was, and we bought it. It's been sitting in my box labeled crystals for the last year, a year and a half. Well, time came to drag it out, and we pulled out one little chunk of this thing. And what we did is we put it into the holder where the galena went, and we just held it into place with a little alligator clip. And then Billy took the phosphor bronze wire and did the same thing that he did with the galena. And man, the fool's gold worked much better than the galena. I don't know why. It may have been that we had a better crystal, but we tried it with several different crystals, and we got much better results with the fool's gold than we did with the galena, which is pretty surprising because the galena was much more, I think, a much more widely used mineral for this purpose. But we had great luck with the iron pyrite. And so, thinking about you, Mike, up there in Juneau, we took an envelope and put 4 or 5 hunks of iron pyrite in the mail. So in a week or so, or however long it takes to get, it's going through the military mail system. So it's now making its way somehow by a very circuitous route up to Juneau, but you will be able to experiment with iron pyrite with fool's gold here in the next couple weeks, and we'll be expecting a report here on Solder Smoke, KL7R M0HBR.
That's great. You know, my mom, I don't know if I mentioned this, she was a rock hound, and she would gather agates and gold and galena and things like that, but she had huge chunks of iron pyrite that she had and sphalerite and other lead zinc compounds. But iron pyrite, I'm fairly certain I can find in Juneau on the ground, and that would be fun this summer. I'll have to make an expedition to find some iron pyrite, because this is a gold mining town, and there's all this quartz crystal on the ground in the tailings in front of the mines, and I'm sure there's pyrite in that quartz. So I'll have to dig some out. I have a story, but I can't relate it in public. About I used to be a drill helper, and I've seen some beautiful crystals of massive sulfides. We'll just leave it at that there, Bill. Well, congratulations, Billy. Good job. You know, I my first radio, I think I might have been 8 or 7 or something like that. I was like a Cub Scout, second level Cub Scout, whatever that is. Weeblow? I can't remember. And went in town to the radio store, and a guy handed me a 1N34A, and he said, get a set of headphones, and hit one into a wire and one into a ground, and you should hear something. And I tried it, and before I even hitched an antenna to it, just the diode across the headphones, I was able to pick up like 3 radio stations in downtown Anchorage. They all came in on the same frequency, but just my body was enough of an antenna to be able to pick it up. Well, cool. Well, what else has been going on, guys? Or do you have more to report on that on your crystal receiver there? M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Well, we got we have a story about lasers. Maybe we'll leave that for the next one. What?
The laser trap?
The laser communicator.
Oh, yeah.
Should we talk about that now or should we talk about it next week?
Next week.
Yeah, Billy wants to leave that one for next week. And what else? No, maybe just saying that. What else are we going to mention? Yeah, I want to. There's something you were working on. I want to ask you about that. What else? I understand, Mike, that you've been making some interesting use of kitchen implements there, in the great tradition of true radio amateurs, of stealing or borrowing items from the kitchen. I guess this all began with breadboards, and that's where the term breadboarding came from, way back when hams were hams, and amateur radio operators needed something to build a radio on. They would often head down to the kitchen and acquire or requisition or swipe a breadboard, and that would be what the rig was built on. Now, what's this I hear that you've been using some more high-tech kitchen devices for ham shack temperature measurement, KL7R, M0HBR?
Well, on the disc of experimental methods is an article on measuring drift in crystal-controlled receivers, on all oscillators. Way to measure drift and to compensate for drift in VFOs and crystal oscillators and what all, and it has you put the oscillator inside of a styrofoam box and put a thermometer in there, and I was thinking, my wife has this really cool laser, I don't know what you call it, it's a laser a culinary laser thermometer by Bonjour, that's French. And basically, you point the thing. It's got a little trigger, and it's like a pistol. You point it at the thing you want to measure, and a little red laser dot hits the substance you want to measure the temperature of, and it detects and puts out a little digital reading of the temperature. So I thought I could use this. So I was fiddling with a crystal oscillator to find out how much drift it had. Actually, I started with ME602. I was trying to learn about oscillators. They've been kicking my tail, and so I thought I'd start, you know, and do stepwise. You know, do a crystal oscillator, find out what the drift is of it, and compensate if I had to. And the ME602 has bias compensation circuits in it for temperature and what all, so it's supposed to be more stable as far as frequency drift. And so I pointed this laser, culinary laser thermometer at the ME602, and I heat up the ME602 with a light bulb and write down the drift and blow on it to cool down and stuff like that, and I determined it drifted 3 parts per million per degree C, which is, you know, pretty fair at 10 megahertz. And so then I thought, well, that was such a success. I'll go ahead and build a VFO. And so I tried a Hartley, and I couldn't make it oscillate down at 7 megahertz. So I tried a Colpitts, and it wouldn't oscillate at all. So then I gave up on any 602 oscillators and went to an FET oscillator, Hartley, and had some success there, but I haven't yet got it down on 7 megahertz. It's still up around 10 megahertz. I've been initially started without NPO capacitors, and that was a learning experience, but a complete waste of time. So I've been using the NPO capacitors that that were given to me a while back. I can't remember the fellow's name right now, but the nice fellow that gave me a care package there, he sent some NPOs. So anyway, when I get it down 7 megahertz and get it relatively stable and to where it oscillates and doesn't break out oscillation when I get in the same room, I'll point the laser at it and see if I can determine its drift per degree coefficient there, Bill. M0HBR, KL7R.
KL7R, M0HBR. Wow. It just, you know, how cool is that? Pointing lasers, using lasers and infrared sensors there to take temperature measurements on experimental oscillators. Excellent, Mike. Good use of the kitchen implements. I hope your wife doesn't mind the loss of the Bonjour French temperature measuring device. All right, excellent. Let's see what else. Well, the whole oscillator thing is interesting, and trying to get them to run. Maybe play with the values of the capacitors in the feedback network there on the Colpitts. Because sometimes if you don't have them, you don't have them right, they won't give you enough feedback. And I always find that if I have trouble getting them to start up, you just play around a little bit with the values of the caps in the feedback network. I have an excellent supply of NPO caps here. I think I got it from the NorCal QRP Club, one of these offers that they made a while back, a capacitor kit. And they sent you this wonderful box with just every NPO capacitor you could ever want. What I do with mine is I took out a board. I guess it's about 1x3 plank of wood, and I just thumbtacked them all down on there, and I have my capacitor board. So anytime I need one, I just reach over for the board, and I have it all labeled, and there they are, and they're just real easy to get to. I did the same thing with resistors. I have one of these kind of bubble pack resistor kits that give you just these kind of ribbons of resistors. And it's always hard to rummage around. You waste a lot of time trying to find them. So, again, I got a similar size board, and with thumbtacks, I just nailed them all down onto the ribbons onto the board. And with a ballpoint pen, I just went in there and wrote down the values next to it. And that makes it a real easy way to get to your capacitors and resistors. And they sit right next to the bench here. So that's my hints and kinks of the day here on Solder Smoke 45. Oh, yeah, you mentioned on the Crystal Radios, you mentioned that you sent me a little text message. We should mention that we put a video up on the Crystal Radio so you could see it in operation and actually see what it's like to use the cat's whisker with the chunk of iron pyrite. And it's pretty neat. You could actually see us looking around for the sweet spot. That's on the you could find it on the Gadgeteer News page, and also the Gadgeteer video page. Also, we have a little audio clip there of the Kismet radio playing over the actual headphones, so you can see what the thing sounds like. Anyway, if anybody's interested, check out those pages. And we also have a very nice video from Mike up there now, demonstrating how LT Spice is used in modeling circuits. I think people will really get a kick out of that. That's on the video section of the Gadgeteer.us page. So well, Mike, we didn't talk about this. What did Santa Claus deliver to the KL7R shack? KL7R M0HBR.
Oh, you're going to put me on the spot here. Before I go any farther, I just wanted to mention that it was Kay Wheeler, WD0BDK, that sent me the care package with I had a couple of really small, like 2 picofarad NPOs, and Kay sent me a bunch of 30s and I think some 10s or something like that. So I've got a pile of 30s trying to make up about 200 picofarads. So we'll find, I think 30s trying to make like 180. So see where that goes. Well, my wife gave me two really nice college-ruled spiral-bound lab notebooks. So my current lab notebook is almost completely full. I think I've got one or two pages. I think I started it in April, and so it's got one or two pages. And I got a couple of other nice books. So you mentioned the amateur scientist. So I mentioned it to my wife and then forgot about it. And under the tree, I got a CD-ROM from Scientific American that said Dr. Sean's super. Oh, no, actually, it's Dr. Sean, the Amateur Scientist 3.0 Science Fair Edition. And it's basically the amateur scientist articles in Scientific American back to the 1920s, and they're searchable. And you know, how to build your own atom smashers and cloud chambers and Van de Graaff generators and things like that. So there's stuff in there that's a lot of stuff on like tracking thunderstorms and you know, antenna type stuff and radio type stuff and a lot of optics stuff. Build your own telescope, things like that. Got a book from Einstein. I can't remember. It's of my later years. It's a bunch of little one page items he wrote, and I'm just like 10 pages into that. So that was awful nice gift my wife gave me. I'm at a loss. I don't remember what else I got, but those items were great. The lab notebooks are going to come in handy here as I'm solder smoking there, Bill. How about you? Did you guys score M0HBR, KL7R?
KL7R, M0HBR. Oh yeah, we did very well. But first, we'll find on the lab notebooks. What a great gift. I'm inclined to using the old marble notebooks that we all used to use in school. And I'm surrounded by four or five of them now. And what I do is I use them as a combination logbook notebook. When you open up the notebook on the right side, when you face it on the right side, I use that as a logbook page. And the left side of the page is the lab notebook. And so I could usually tell what I was doing and who I was talking to at around the same time. It works out well for me. I think the important thing is just to have that notebook and jot things down, or else you lose all these amazing ideas. Yeah, The Amateur Scientist. What an amazing book. My mother bought me mine for Christmas way back, I guess, close to its publication date. The one I have is published in 66. And then I lost it somewhere along the line, and I went out to Amazon or eBay a few years ago and got it back. And just an amazing book. We've built a number of things from there. They have great articles that would never fly today, like the one that we built. It, we actually, the kids and I built a project out of the article entitled "How to Tranquilize a Rat," and we didn't actually tranquilize one, but we used the trap. They taught us how to build a trap using a coffee can. It was a humane trap that wouldn't kill the animal, and just a coffee can with a standard rat trap used as the mechanism. And the deal is, the animal crawls inside the can, goes for the bait, and snap, the thing fires, and it doesn't kill him. It just closes the door behind him. And we successfully used this device to trap a gecko lizard in the Azores Islands of Portugal. I'll have to post a picture of that adventure. But oh man, an amazing book. That'll
have the trap.
No, I don't think we have the trap. No, we still have the pictures of it though. But that'll keep you busy for days and weeks there, Mike. Be careful with some of those things. Some of those projects were potentially lethal, not just for you, but for the entire neighborhood and perhaps the entire city of Juneau. The atom smashers and all that. X-ray, yeah, amateur X-ray machines. I remember those. How to build your own X-ray machine. Man, that would uh, the uh, the litigation lawyers would have a field day with that thing today. I'm surprised it's still circulating. There's probably all kinds of warnings and provisos and don't try this at home kind of stuff there. Great stuff. Well, we did very well here Christmas. We got all kinds of items. And one of the best parts, Billy is 9 years old now, and now he's at the point where he's getting stuff that I'm really interested in also.
The helicopter and the plane.
Yeah, well, he mentions a helicopter and a plane. We got a radio control, the world's smallest radio-controlled helicopter called the Pico Z. It's about the size, I guess, a little bit longer than your extended thumb. And, man, it's for use internally. Oh, yeah, there's a video. We didn't put it up, but on YouTube, if you do a search for Pico Z, you could see some guy, good point, though, he put up a video of his Pico Z, and it is really cool. You get good at it, too. You get good at flying that little helicopter around. Billy's become quite expert at it and can fly this thing around. Really great. We also got a radio-controlled airplane, kind of a styrofoam, durable version. And on Christmas Day, we went out, and as we drove over to the park, I kind of warned Billy. I said, you know, this is kind of an iffy proposition. It's always hard to get these things to actually fly. But after about the third time, he had that thing doing loops around the field, radio control. So I think he's a real natural with radio control. And then the other thing, the last thing I want to mention in terms of Christmas presents was this is one of these things, I got it for my wife, but actually I think I got it for me. You know how it is. She has her MP3 player, and they're selling now, I think I mentioned this, these little FM broadcast band transmitters that go with the MP3 player. You just, instead of hooking in the headphones, you hook in this little device into the headphone jack, and it takes your whatever's coming out of your MP3 player and broadcasts it at very QRP levels over the over hopefully an empty spot on the FM broadcast band. Now there are obviously many, many applications for this, and solder smoke listeners could be using this to transmit solder smoke to the entire family, because of course they would all be interested in this kind of stuff that we talk about here. But anyway, we got that going and it works great. You know, the range is not that good. We haven't done any antenna modifications, Mike. That would, of course, be illegal, and we wouldn't dream of doing that. But I suppose it would be possible. We're limiting it to the internal antenna. It gives pretty good coverage here in the house, and I think we're broadcasting on 101.7 FM on the radio dial. So anyway, we had a good Christmas. Good Christmas here. Santa was very kind, and a lot of fairly high-tech gifts arrived. KL7R, M0HBR.
All right. Well, you're bad at living room wide. well, great on all the remote control stuff there, and the fact that you have a natural pilot in the house. That's great. I have a hard time flying remote control airplanes. They just fine for me going away. But flying towards me, I cannot make my brain do the opposite control that you have to have. If the plane's coming towards you, you bank your hand to the right to make the plane bank to the left, and I just can't do that. I'll back away from the mic here a little bit. I guess it was a little bit too hot here. Hello. Yeah, that's better. Anyway, fine on the flying there. Let me adjust my microphone here. Hello. Well, we'll just go with that for a while, and that should be better. Anyway, fine on the flying, and great on the toys. I've had one of those little MP3 players that basically puts out MP3 on your radio, and it plugs in your cigarette lighter. Mine plugs in the cigarette lighter, and then you plug a USB stick into it, and the USB stick has music on it, and the music goes into the player, and the player goes out your radio. Well, it also has this jack on the side that allows you to put in other audio. And so when I had my HF radio in my truck, I wired its audio output into this MP3 player audio in, and it sent radio out to my FM radio. So I used the audio amps on my FM radio as my and speaker system in the truck as my speaker for my HF radio. A little convoluted, but lots of RF involved there, Bill. Over. Oh, let's see.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, it is. It's fun. And of course, anything with a transmitter in it. There's great potential here. I mean, we have one of our listeners, AL7RV, is working on transmitting solder smoke over his local cable TV system there for the community he's living in. So lots of possibilities here. Hey, you mentioned flying, and a video that I put up on the Gadgeteer video site, I think will be of interest. It's the Jet Man, this guy in Switzerland, who has built a kind of personal flying system involving a little homebrew wing, some model airplane jet engines. His name's Yves Rossi, and he has really done some fantastic work. So I think people would get a kick out of that video that's on the video page. Let's see. It might be. Oh, yeah, Mike. One thing I wanted to mention was that you made a comment last time about the quality of the latest issue of QST, and mine just arrived. The January 07 edition of QST just arrived here, and I want to really say that you were right on the money there, because that is a really excellent issue. Kudos to the ARRL and the QST gang. Really great articles. And it's amazing, because I just around the time we were fooling around with Crystal Radios, this article probably has three different articles about Crystal Radio in there. And I guess it's well, that's a good sign in the vintage radio stuff, the annual vintage issue, all kinds of interesting things in there. The UHF column about directional couplers. I've always tried to have trouble understanding exactly how they work, and I think this article is going to explain it to me. So great, it is a wonderful issue. Well, listen, I'm about winding up here. Let me look at our list here, the things we were going to talk about. I think we've gone through quite a bit. It might be approaching time for solder smoke mailbag. Mike, what do you think? KL7R M0HBR.
Well, I had one other item I was thinking about talking about, but it's not that important. I had an HP41C calculator when I was in school, and it was stolen from me, and I've had this need for a scientific calculator. So I did an eBay thing, and I purchased a TI 84 plus on eBay, and I'm hoping it gets here, and then I'll load it full of arcade games and ham radio programs calculating reactants and what all. I need a calculator for that. My wife says, why don't I just use the one that's on the computer, and I just needed to spend some money on that one, so I went ahead and did that. So my second foray into eBay, and we'll see how that works out. I really don't have a lot, Bill. Sure good to hear you. Hit the mailbag, and we'll see what you got there. M0HBR, KL7R.
We're a little bit later in the morning, so we could give that a real gong. Everybody in the house is awake, so I didn't have to do a kind of low-level gong. Welcome to Solder Smoke Mailbag. Mike, the first thing we want to do, this is not really in the mail category, but it's sort of related, so we'll do it. I occasionally check the statistics that our web host provides on who's listening to the program, where they're listening from. A real wealth of data there is available. I don't know if you guys realize it, but I can And anybody else who has a website can check and see how many listeners or how many people are visiting, when they're visiting, what operating systems they're using, what browsers they're using, what files are being downloaded. A real enormous quantity of data is available, and I like to look at it every once in a while to see what's going on with Solder Smoke's listening audience. And one of the surprising things that I found, pleasantly surprised, was that we have a lot of listeners in China. China right now, in terms of people who are checking in to Solder Smoke, in terms of the countries, USA is number one. Most of our listeners are in the U.S. Then lots of listeners with web addresses that indicate that they're in the European Union. Australia is number three. China is number four. We've got quite a few listeners from China, and we think it's great. And I'm sure part of it I'm sure a big part of it is just interest in the technical homebrew discussions that we're involved in. But we suspect people may also be listening in just in an effort to listen to technical discussions in English, because we know that I think there are more people studying English in China now than there are people speaking English in the United States, which is amazing. So we just wanted to give what we'd say in American slang, a shout out to all our listeners in China. We're glad you're with us, and we hope you'll send us some email and tell us about what you're working on and what you think of the Solder Smoke program. So I know we have a lot of listeners that we've never received any emails from China, and we like to get emails. So please send us some emails, and we're glad you're listening. And let's see, back to the mailbag list. Steve, G0FUW, writes that he's building a Pixie 2, the WA6 BOI version, and he was working on it on Boxing Day. I need to explain about Boxing Day. That's a wonderful UK holiday. It's the day after Christmas, and being here in the UK, we got it off also, so it turned the Christmas holiday into a four-day weekend for us, and so we're all in favor of Boxing Day, and very glad to hear that Steve was building a Pixie 2 on that holiday. We also received an email from Kent, VE4 KEH in Canada. He says that Solder Smoke has inspired him to melt solder, and that he is now working on a NorCal 49er. So thanks for that note, Kent. Good luck with the project, and keep us posted. We've received many helpful and friendly emails from our friends over at Amateur Logic TV. Their episode number 11 is out. We watched it, enjoyed it quite a bit, and we're always amazed at the technical quality and work, and not only the content, but the technical quality of the production over there at Amateur Logic TV. They're really really great at that and good innovators. And we've asked them from time to time for technical hints and how to do this and how to do that. And their pointers are responsible for, helped us get many of our LT Spice videos. Mine anyway. Mike was using a different program, but they're always great about giving us technical advice, and we really appreciate that. So thanks very much to the Amateur Logic TV guys. Got an email from Mark, K5LXP. And he sent some really interesting websites about an electric car that he built. He modified, I think, a pickup, and modified it to be fully electric, and he's driving it all over the place, including up mountains. So great about that, Mark. And Mark, I really liked your tower cam. Mark put a simple webcam up on top of his tower, and so as he moves the thing around, you get the tower eye view of his neighborhood, and I thought that was really cool. I think if you just Google his call, it'll take you to his site. If not, I'll try to put it up on the Gadgeteer News webpage. And then finally, we got an email from Mike in Panama City, who's been listening to all the Solder Smoke episodes, and he just asked us to explain how it is that we link up here, Mike. I think it's a good question. I think we sometimes take for granted that people know what EchoLink is, but maybe I'll just take a couple minutes here to explain. Anyway, we use the EchoLink system. It's a voice-over internet program, and it's designed for radio amateurs. And basically, we link up here, we hit the record button, and we use the record feature of EchoLink to create a WAV file. We do a little bit of editing using the Audacity audio program. Audacity also turns it into an MP3. We upload it to the my website, my web host, and out it goes. So that's basically it. And Mike, if you want to get a sense of what EchoLink is like, just Google EchoLink, and it's a free download, and you could use it once you get your amateur radio license. They do require a license for use of EchoLink. It's a wonderful program, a great service, and hats off to the guys who created it. There are thousands of people using it right now. I'm looking at the screen right now. On the European server, there are currently, just on the European server, there are currently 3,176 stations. So EchoLink has made a big difference and made a very positive contribution to the world of ham radio. Mike, that's the end of Solder Smoke Mailbag, and I suspect that episode number 45 is drawing to a close. We've been going on. We've covered a lot of territory, so I'm going to just turn it over to you, and then maybe we could wrap up with some Happy New Year greetings to the listeners. Let's see. KL7R, M0HBR.
Yeah, M0HBR, KL7R. Well, you banged the gong there, Bill. It was such a gong, it was a clang. Well, I know about two or three phrases in Chinese, and I think they're with a Taiwan accent. But ni hao to friends in China, and I'm looking at Google, and I'm going to make an attempt to say Happy New Year in Mandarin. Xin yin guai lei. So I'm guessing. We'll see how it works. Ni hao, anyway, everybody, and Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you and Billy there, Bill. 73 from Juneau. M0HBR, KL7R.
Man, this is one of our most cosmopolitan programs ever. We have included, I don't even know if you realize, we have comments in Mandarin and in French. It's just amazing. Yeah, well, ni hao to everybody out there, and Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to all the Solder Smoke listeners. We hope everybody has great luck in 2007. Thanks for tuning in. Please send us email. We love to receive it. You can send it to soldersmoke@yahoo.com. That's soldersmoke, just one word. And we'd love to get the email. Hey, Mike, thanks a lot, and 73. Have a great key night, everybody, and a Happy New Year. KL7R and the very big group, 73 from M0HBR.